Welcome back to the Florida Travel Fanatics Podcast. I'm Clark.
I'm Heather.
And this is episode 31, How to Enjoy Florida State Parks, Part 3. In our last episode, we talked about the Florida State Parks in what the state calls District 2, from Tallahassee over to Jacksonville and down to Crystal River on the Gulf of Mexico. This week, we'll be talking about District 3, which is in the eastern part of the state, starting just below Jacksonville and going all the way down to Fort Pierce. As we've mentioned in previous episodes, there are 195 state parks in Florida, and there's so much to talk about, we've decided to make this into a five-episode series. Before we get any further into this episode, we'd like to let you know that we've officially launched our monthly Florida Travel Fanatics newsletter, and we'll put a link to that to sign up for it in the episode notes. That'll put you on our website, and that also includes some really nice pictures that we've taken around the state that makes great wallpaper for your computers, tablets, or phones. I took a really nice picture of the Lowe's Hotel in Miami with my GoPro, and I use that actually as the wallpaper on my MacBook, which is where I edit all of our podcast and YouTube content. While our newsletter will be monthly, we'll put out special editions whenever something really newsworthy happens, such as a hurricane or torrential rains in Fort Lauderdale, and any other significant event that would affect your travel here in the state. Additionally, we're going to be doing a special Black Friday newsletter email this year, which will be a list of special travel deals on flights, hotels, gear, etc., etc. And if you subscribe to our newsletter, you'll get that.
So let's move on to this episode's Florida travel news. Hurricane Idalia was ugly. It came ashore as a borderline Category 3 Cat 4 at Keaton Beach in the Big Bend area. And that's where the kind of the peninsula of Florida kind of turns the corner and goes towards Alabama and to the west. It does basically make a big bend. Cedar Key and Steinhatchee had some significant flooding as well. And the good news is that it's mostly a rural area on that part of the Gulf Coast, but still not good for the people that live there. We found a really good YouTube video, a drone video someone did with a before and after of Steinhatchee, which we'll put in the episode notes. Actually, it's an after and then a before, which is kind of interesting. There was some really bad flooding there. Weather forecasters have said that this hurricane season would be a battle between very warm ocean waters and El Nino's wind shear effect. And so far, the warm water is winning, unfortunately.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty here either. The storm was 100. We're in Tampa, we're in the Tampa area. We're about 25 miles inland. And it was windy and a lot of rain. And the storm, I think, the center was 100 miles to the west. But we got a lot of rain. Didn't get any tornadoes, thankfully. We had some lightning, lots of rain.
We had wind gusts, but we had some pool floats that were set underneath our screened area. And they actually did not blow into the pool.
Big fluffy floats.
It was odd.
There was coastal flooding really pretty much along the whole Gulf. The further south you got, the less it was. But there was some down in Sarasota and areas down there. In Clearwater, there was some places a foot of water in the road. Some of it wasn't actually very passable, but it didn't get much up into the buildings. But we've got a family member who has a rental house down in Treasure Island, which is St. Pete Beach. And he had a couple inches of water throughout there, even though he sandbagged it and taped it. So there was some pretty significant damage. I think they said, no surprise, the total damage is in the many billions throughout the whole coastal areas. It's tough to see, and there's just a lot of water everywhere.
It's really tough to see. I mean, the beauty of the area makes you say, yes, we want to have a house here or we want to live here. But people who are coastal really have to deal with this regularly.
Yeah, sometimes it's decades and decades, and sometimes it can be, you know, a couple times in a short period of time. Like we had Irma 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, and then last year Ian. So there's, you know, Heather always likes to make this point is that people think hurricanes equals Florida, but hurricanes can strike anywhere from, gosh, there was a Category 4 in California.
Right.
Which was crazy. I didn't think that was even possible. But it can be anywhere from the Yucatan Peninsula around the entire Gulf of Mexico, Florida, and up the eastern seaboard all the way to Cape Cod. It can be anywhere on the East Coast.
You might have seen weather reports for Lee, which is sort of hovering in the Atlantic right now. And it may or may not make landfall. I haven't seen the actual...
They haven't seen the turn yet.
The turn Lee. Yet to see if it's going to... But it's going to probably, if it hits, it's going to hit the upper Atlantic.
I think last week they were saying it could be anywhere from the mid-Atlantic states, from the D.C. area all the way up to New England or even Nova Scotia.
But it's
which is crazy.
Big one.
It's a big one. It's tapered down a little. So as it gets further north, the cooler waters and the wind shear kind of knocks it down. But it was a Category 5 briefly. It was a monster a couple days ago. So
it's good that it's slowing down.
But it could hit anywhere, not just a Florida thing.
On a bright note, Phoebe wins an award. Just days after celebrating her first birthday, Tampa International Airport's 21-foot-tall giant pink flamingo, formerly titled Home by artist Matthew Mazzotta and affectionately nicknamed Phoebe, has officially been named the winner of the prestigious Coda Works Awards. It's a distinguished panel of 18 jurors who do the voting, and it's comprised of some of the most influential names in the art and design industry. They reviewed and scored the entries, naming Phoebe the winner of the transportation category. The public was also given the opportunity to weigh in, and Phoebe picked up one of the two People's Choice Awards with more than 3,000 votes. Said one of the judges, "The wonderful, witty idea of a scaled-up scene makes one smile and want to interact by taking a selfie at the first place, stimulating afterwards deeper reflection. An excellent example of public art project combining joy, deep thought, and site-specific approach." You need to check out our Instagram to see pictures of Phoebe that we took. One of the local TV stations, Fox 13, did a nice video segment on this award and Phoebe's birthday, and we'll put a link to that in our episode notes.
And in this episode's Florida Travel Tips, be aware that there are computer hackers trying to exploit users on TripAdvisor.com. In my day job, I'm actually in the cybersecurity industry, so I see these things, fortunately, at least for the podcast. Don't click on any emails that you might see about bad reviews, and don't let anything TripAdvisor related download any attached files or HTML files. The attacking files will install a really bad piece of malware that does what's called ransomware, which will encrypt all the files on your computer, rendering it useless. I put an article with the technical details. I'll put that in the episode notes, and I did send that out in the last newsletter. Similarly, there have been hackers and scammers on Booking.com. The scammers pretend to have properties for rent, but they don't, and they're just there to steal your deposits and payments. And apparently Booking.com isn't doing enough to protect consumers. So either avoid Booking.com or maybe just look for a reservation, but book it elsewhere. Don't book through Booking.com if possible, which is a shame because I like Booking.com. It's one of the few sites, the hotel property sites, that's actually pretty good.
And they should work it out.
Yeah, they need to take
for the time being, definitely take
it. Yeah, so I would not for now book through booking.com at all. So it's a shame to see the bad guys out there doing this kind of thing. But in the cybersecurity industry, we see this dozens of times a day. It's pretty sad. Google Flights has a new feature. Now let's start by saying we did not know Google even had a flights app or flight site. Regular users of Google Flights might notice a new feature the next time they go to the site to check out airline schedules and compare flight prices. The new feature is Google's guidance on the cheapest time to book a flight, which supplements price tracking alerts and a price guarantee option already in place. Google Flights said it already lets users see whether current prices for a search are low, typical, or high compared with past averages for the same route. But starting this week, searches that have a reliable trend will also let users see in what time frame prices have typically been the lowest. Users then can better decide whether to book now or later, Google said in their recent press release. Users who want to wait for lower fares before booking can use a price tracking feature that can do most of the heavy lifting for you, Google said. People who enable price tracking will be automatically notified if flight prices drop significantly. It can be set up to track specific dates or for any dates price tracking. On some flights, users might notice a price guarantee badge pop up. This won't happen on everyone, but some will. If you book one of these flights, Google says it will monitor the price every day before takeoff. If the price goes down, we will pay you back the difference. That's not a bad deal. Hmm. The price guarantees are part of a pilot program available for select book on Google itineraries departing from the U.S.
No pun intended?
Good one, honey. Pilot program. You have a pun there built in. I think that was an accident, but it came across pretty funny. Yeah. But we didn't even know they had it. There was a Google flight thing, so we'll definitely be checking that out.
And speaking of flying, new direct flights are available from Toronto, Canada to Tampa on Porter Airlines, which is a Canadian airline founded in 2006. Based in Toronto, Porter flies to all major Canadian cities and many locations in the United States. Besides Tampa, Porter flies to Fort Myers, Orlando, Miami, and Fort Lauderdale. We've got some listeners in the Toronto area in Brantford, so we hope this information is especially useful to you.
Moving on to our main topic in this episode, let's talk about the Florida State Parks in District 3. One of the most popular parks in this district, or the whole state for that matter, is Silver Spring State Park near Ocala. It's located in between Orlando and Gainesville. Most people consider Silver Springs to be one of the best, if not the best, springs park in all of Florida. The spring itself is one of the best in the state, and it's famous for its glass-bottom boat tours, which started in the 1870s when Hullum Jones and Philip Morrill, gotta love a guy named Hullum, Fixed a piece of glass to the bottom of a rowboat. History was made. My family made a visit to this park in the early 1970s when I was a kid. We went to the glass bottom, went on the glass bottom boats. And I just remember being really a fascinating thing as a kid. You could see the fish and all that kind of neat, those neat things. Canoeing and kayaking, camping, hiking, birding, park special events, and the Silver River Museum are also popular activities at this park. The park offers primitive camping, primarily for groups, as well as RV and tent camping, and they have some really nice cabins for rent. The cabins have central air, gas fireplaces, screen porches, and sleep up to six. The park has a long and really interesting history and has often been described as Florida's first real attraction. The park's Cracker Village is a replica of a 19th century pioneer settlement and is available for exploration at the park. Discover what life was like at the turn of the century in Florida's Piney Woods. The collection of buildings represents a small cracker settlement dating to the 1890s. A typical homestead of the time would have included a cabin, an outbuilding such as a barn, pantry, smokehouse, and outhouse. Schoolhouses, churches, and blacksmith shops would have been found in settlements that homesteaders visited to attend social gatherings and to barter for supplies. Tours of the Cracker Village are given on the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 10 a.m. During the tour, the village's buildings will be open and unlocked, and on most tours, the blacksmith's forge will be fired up. In the 1930s, Hollywood discovered Silver Springs, and over the years, scenes from at least 20 movies were filmed here, including Rebel Without a Cause starring James Dean, Distant Drums starring Gary Cooper, the James Bond movie Moonraker, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and six Tarzan flicks. Episodes of television shows such as Sea Hunt were filmed at Silver Springs as well. In fact, legend has it that Sea Hunt star Lloyd Bridges learned to scuba dive at Silver Springs. Surprisingly, Silver Springs has only been a state park since 2013. Previously, it was owned by ABC Paramount and was run as a commercial tourist attraction, but fell into hard times with the rise of Disney and the other nearby attractions. It fell into disrepair, and there were environmental issues that were becoming a problem, so the state took control and has been taking much better care of the park since then. The park allows private events, including weddings. They have two restaurants there that are currently closed for renovation, but are scheduled to open this fall.
And while we're talking about state parks with springs, De Leon Springs State Park, as in Ponce de Leon, who was the Spanish explorer, the first guy from Europe to get to Florida.
4 foot 10. Yeah,
little guy. He first settled in Puerto Rico, but he was the first guy to, European to get to Florida. And he was also the person to name it. So I think that's kind of interesting. This is also a really nice spot and offers swimming, hiking, and canoeing, as well as kayaking. The park provides access to Lake Woodruff National Wildlife Refuge, where canoeists can explore 22,000 acres of lakes, creeks, and marshes. Canoes and kayak rentals are available. The spring here is especially good for swimming, and you can snorkel as well. Scuba diving is available, but only if you're doing certification dives. So if you're coming down to Florida to complete your scuba certification, this could be a really good spot for you. We both did our scuba certification dives in quarries, which is definitely not as nice as a crystal clear Florida spring. De Leon Springs Park is located at 601 Ponce de Leon Boulevard in De Leon, Florida.
In case you needed a little more Ponce de Leon in your
life. Yeah, exactly.
We thought that was funny.
It's a 35-minute drive west of Daytona.
Anastasia State Park is a wonderful oceanfront beach park just north of St. Augustine Beach. If you're looking for a very unspoiled beach experience while visiting St. Augustine or the area, check out Anastasia State Park. It's a barrier island with 4 miles of wide-open pristine beach and a large inshore pond. There's a lot to do here, including bicycling on the beach, surfing, fishing, hiking, sailing, and kayaking. There's a company called Anastasia Water Sports on site that rents surfboards, bikes, kayaks, sailboats, and beach gear. Additionally, there is a beachfront restaurant on site and a beach store where you can get snacks, souvenirs, bait and tackle, beach supplies, and camping necessities. And speaking of camping, the park has 139 campsites for RVs and tents with water and power at all sites. With its proximity to St. Augustine, it's a very popular spot to camp, and camping reservations can be hard to get. Book early, and you can make reservations as much as 11 months in advance. I did a lookup on this just to see what the reservations were. During the week in January, February, there are reservations, but the weekends are full. So if you're going to go camping, definitely try, if your schedule's flexible, try to book during the week. There's still spots available during those times. The park was created in 1949 and is home to the coquina quarries that were mined to build the famous fort in St. Augustine, Castillo de San Marcos.
I think coquina is like one of the, I find it to be incredibly fascinating. When we did the tour of the fort at St. Augustine, the ranger carries around a small sample of the coquina. And basically what it is, these teeny tiny clamshells that are compressed over the years, and the rainwater basically erodes part of the lime.
It's a little clam. Isn't it a clam?
It's a little clam. Yeah, it's a little tiny clam. And the rainwater and, you know, Mother Nature just breaks it down so they start to stick together. And then they can be mined, and then they mine them and then they dry them out into bricks. But it's amazing.
If you left it, it would become limestone. Didn't it? Which is in thousands of years, it would become limestone, but it's kind of like half limestone, half shell.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically fireproof, and it withstood like 3 days of, you know, gunfire at the fort. It didn't break down. So this is really cool that that's where it comes from.
Yeah, that's neat. Yeah, it's easy. And you go to the park and see the fort. You're like, oh, that's pretty neat. They mined it nearby. Well, where is it? It's in the park. You can see the area where they quarried it or mined it. Sebastian Inlet State Park is located just north of Vero Beach, and it's unique because it's located on both sides of the Sebastian Inlet, right at where the ocean is. The inlet was created in 1923, allowing water to pass from the Indian River to the Atlantic Ocean and back as the tides rise and fall. That obviously makes a great area to fish, and there's a long fishing jetty at the inlet that sticks out into the ocean. There's also a terrific tidal pool, which is like a lake, but the water flows in and out of the pool with tides, bringing in fish and turtles that you can swim with. The park is a major surfing destination with surfers from around the globe flocking here to ride rides like First Peak and the Monster Hole. That whole section of Florida from Cocoa Beach all the way, it's a big surfing area. It's people make trips and come there. Surfers come there just to surf. It's really a great area. And you can take surfing lessons in those areas and rent surfboards too. Two museums provide area history. The McLarty Treasure Museum highlights the 1715 Spanish treasure fleet, while the Sebastian Fishing Museum chronicles the history of the area's fishing industry. The fishing there is pretty phenomenal. I watch a show called the Fuck a Florida Fishing Report every week, and they've always got reports in this area. There's some great fishing there. And if you're looking for a good brewery and restaurant in the area, check out Paradolia Brewing Company located in Sebastian. Looks like a neat place. We're going to check that out next time we're there.
Next on our list is Ravine Garden State Park, which is located in Palatka, Florida, between Gainesville and St. Augustine. In 1933, Palatka, like most other communities in the United States, was suffering from the Great Depression. A local paving contractor, Thomas Beard Gillespie, recognized that tourism was becoming an important economic force in Florida, noting that several parts of Florida were attracting hundreds of visitors where they actually had something worthwhile for them to stop and see. Out of this observation, the concept of Ravine Gardens was formed. The gardens were officially opened on July 4th, 1933. At the time, over 270,000 plants were planted in the formal gardens and along the slopes of the ravines. Dramatic gardens in the ravine were landscaped with magnificent combinations of tropical and subtropical plantings. You can drive through the 1.8-mile loop around the ravines, which is thickly blanketed with azaleas and other blooms, while hiking the trails that curve gracefully from one observation terrace to the next. Picnic tables and grills are available throughout the park, and a 2,000-square-foot picnic pavilion is also of area that can be reserved for family reunions and other functions. Today, the park is a combination of formal and natural gardens. While the ravine system has been allowed to revert to a more natural state, there are still 5 acres of formal gardens that still exist. Visitors can explore stone terraces, view water features, fountains, historic garden beds, and a 60-foot obelisk dedicated to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. On holiday weekends, the park displays flags of the 48 states that were in the Union when the park was established. And every year on Memorial Day weekend, they have the Palatka Blue Crab Festival. And we will be going to that for sure.
That made our list for
definitely,
sure.
Definitely.
Blue crabs, love it. Beulah Creek State Park is located just a few miles north of Ormond Beach. Access to the park is free. It's always nice when something's free on vacation or on a trip. The main entrance will take you directly to the park's main attraction, the Fairchild Oak Tree, one of the largest live oaks in the southeastern U.S. After you visit the Fairchild Oak, you can hike or bike one of the several trails built and maintained in order to provide visitors a glimpse of unique habitats and wildlife. The longest trail is the Beulah Woods Trail, a 6.8-mile hiking trail that runs from the Fairchild Oak to Beulah Plantation Ruins Historic State Park. If the entire 6.8-mile hike seems a little daunting, you can choose to park at the second entrance off Walter Boardman Lane and hike the short distance north or south. The park is small but beautiful, making it a great spot to stop in for an hour or two to have a picnic, lunch, or enjoy a hike.
One of the most interesting parks that we found in District 3 is the Marjorie Harris Carr Cross Florida Greenway. It follows the path of the abandoned Cross Florida Barge Canal, and despite never being completed, this gargantuan public works project has a long history. Had it been finished, the Cross Florida Barge Canal would have spanned completely across central Florida by linking a patchwork of rivers, artificial waterways, and lakes. The possibility of crossing Florida through inland waterways was first raised in 1567 by the founder of Spanish St. Augustine, Pedro Menendez de Avilés. Even in the early days of the European colonization, the journey around the Cape of Florida was considered treacherous. There were pirates, dangerous currents, hurricanes, and shallow waters, which doomed many ships that attempted the lengthy trip. It was hundreds of years before the concrete plans for the canal took shape. In the 19th century, momentum for the canal grew. Business owners and traders supported the canal because it would make it easier to sell and ship goods like timber and cotton between the East Coast and the ports on the Gulf of Mexico. In 1826, John Calhoun and Daniel Webster petitioned Congress to appropriate funds for the first survey of a possible route. Six more studies were funded between 1829 and 1911, and they all determined that the canal was a bad idea, or at least too expensive and difficult an undertaking to be worthwhile. In the 1930s, President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal program brought hope for the canal project. The New Deal was a group of programs administered by the federal government that funded and built infrastructure projects. The goal of the New Deal was to stimulate the economy and to employ people during the Great Depression, all while building infrastructure and recreational facilities that benefited the public. In fact, 9 Florida state parks were built in the New Deal era by Civilian Conservation Corps, or the CCC.
New Deal funding for the canal ran out within 3 years. Local critics insisted that the canal would disrupt Florida's aquifers and waterways. National opposition grew in response to claims that the project was a waste of taxpayer money and of limited value to people outside of Florida. But hope for the canal had yet to run out completely. During World War II, German submarines threatened Florida's coast and shipping lanes. During the war, Congress modified the former sea level canal project into a lock and dam shallow draft canal along the same route as the original sea level project. After the war, rivalry between the United States and the Soviet Union intensified. Canal boosters pointed to the project as an asset to national security and rehashed old arguments in its favor. Construction resumed in 1964 with President Lyndon B. Johnson presiding at the groundbreaking in Palatka, Florida. However, the canal was ultimately not to be. Books like Rachel Carson's Silent Spring prompted a new surge of environmental awareness in the 1960s, and major opposition to the canal emerged. Environmental criticism was strengthened by revived complaints about the canal's cost and usefulness. Heading a group called the Florida Defenders of the Environment, activist Marjorie Harris Carr appealed to President Nixon and issued legal challenges to construction. Nixon stopped the project in 1971, ending a long-held but never-realized dream. Over the next decade, continued legal battles ensued, and the political momentum for the project waned. Congress eventually deauthorized the project in 1990. With the canal only about one-third complete, the land had been secured for a path that sat in limbo. So what do you do with the largest unfinished public's work project in history? You turn it into a greenway. The Marjorie Harris Carr Cross Florida Greenway, that's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful.
Is a protected green belt corridor that spans more than 70,000 acres of land formerly known as the Cross Florida Barge Canal. It's a 110-mile linear park that offers more than 300 miles of trails of all types, including paddling, hiking, mountain biking, equestrian, and multiple-use trails. It's only about a mile wide at its widest. This is a long, skinny strip along the canal. It's pretty neat. Some of the mountain bike sections are part of the famous Santos Mountain Bike Trails, which is definitely the number one place to mountain bike in Florida. We talked about that, about Santos, in our episode number 15 about how to enjoy bike riding in Florida.
But we never got that far to the Greenway. We never did that. So that'll be another thing to add.
Yes.
Lake Louisa State Park is located 30 minutes west of Orlando, and it's a well-known park for camping. Glamping or glamour camping is offered here, and they refer to it as carefree camping because they set up the campsite for you and you just show up, which is my kind of camping.
That's definitely glamour.
Really nice. The park also offers 20 really nice lakefront cabins, including 2 with ADA access. The campground has 60 full facility campsites for both RVs with both 30 and 50 amp electricity. The park offers primitive camping for that real Florida experience if you are not a glamper, and also has equestrian camping with 5-horse paddocks. There are 3 lakes connected to the park, Lake Louisa, Lake Hammond, and Lake Drummond, and together they provide excellent opportunities for canoeing, kayaking, and stand-up paddleboarding. Bike riding is popular on the park's 7 miles of paved trails and 20 miles of unpaved trails. There is also guided horseback rides available as well. Lake Louisa State Park is an excellent one-day or multi-day visit, especially for those of you who are visiting Orlando for Disney or Universal and you're looking for an alternate activity.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we hope we've given you some good ideas about how you can enjoy Florida state parks. In our next episode, we'll talk about the state parks in District 4, which gets really good, which is basically the area from the west coast from Tampa down to Naples and some areas inland. So there's some terrific beach parks there and a lot to talk about. We're excited about that one. Details will be in the episode description. As always, check us out on our YouTube channel, Florida Travel Fanatics, and feel free to contact us via Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or email at contact@floridatravelfanatics.com. You can also join our private Facebook group. And as we mentioned earlier, please join our newsletter mailing list. Thanks for listening.
Sunny days ahead.